Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. So very glad to be here. This is a very good week to do this verse. Can somebody tell me why this is such a good week to do this chapter? Why is this such a good week? It's Halloween. What better time to do hellish planets on Halloween when everyone is trying to dress up like the ghouls we'll be reading about? So this is a very good time for that. And so this is our Halloween gift to you. I was going through this morning, I wish we had done the planets before. Did anybody introduce Sariputta's analysis of that chapter? Yeah, oh, very good. Okay, I was going through and just seeing, okay. Ajo vacha maharse tad vachitarayam lokshaya katamiti. Text 1. I'll read that. King Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, "My dear sir, why are the living entities put into different material situations? Kindly explain this to me." And the different situations, by the way, and then we'll get on to reading the verses, but it's something we all see. I mean, right now, we're sitting in a material situation that, by all counts, is fairly comfortable. And there's some people who are much more comfortable. And when you go to some places of the world, India's a good place, you see, when I first went to India, the first thing that struck me was everything. But after that, after I got over everything, and there was a lot of everything, what struck me is the contrast. You could be in just like there's that movie Slumdog Millionaire, which some of you may have seen, some may not have, that actually takes place very near our Juhu Center. Did you all know that? That actual slum, which is gone now, takes place very near our Juhu Center. And when I was first in Juhu, before some of you were born, 1971, so Juhu was just a piece of land with some buildings and some tents that we were staying in. And I used to walk around, and I even walked over to that slum. And Juhu itself is kind of has, you know, a Holiday Inn, which is still there, some nice hotels, a beautiful beach, and then right nearby, probably some of the worst slums in Bombay. And so what struck me was the extreme contrast. Here you have a, you know, I used to like sneak into the Holiday Inn hotel because being American, and if I put on my civvies, I would look like I was maybe a tourist. And so I could wander in there and just sit in the air conditioning and read for a little bit because it was kind of hot. Get away with it. So there, I didn't like it, though. The people, they were obnoxious as well. I mean, I went to India looking for something, you know, give me some substance. And the reason why I left America, faced dysentery and all the other things you face, the reason I left America was to avoid the people I met in the lobby of, like, I remember I used to go hang out at the Taj and the Holiday Inn. So, but nevertheless, it was air conditioned. So there are varieties of conditions everywhere. And I wanted to mention that before we got into this verse, because that is the nature of this world. There are very, very hellish places on the planet now, and there are very, very opulent places. It doesn't mean, curiously enough, a study was done of the happiest place in the world. Bangladesh. Happiest place in the world. Now, I haven't been to Bangladesh, but I live quite a bit on the border of Bangladesh. in India side. So same thing. And, you know, they have a little less than nothing, except everyone eats fine because everything grows from the trees, or they eat what they call sea vegetables. You know what sea vegetables are? Fish. Yeah, fish. But so everyone, it's basically a Muslim country, some Hindus, and everyone has enough to eat, to have their villages, they have their security. And it was, so what to an American might go there and say, this is hellish, but actually USA Today said it's heaven. So hell and heaven have different, depends on the consciousness. There's a lot of things going on here. But I want to give a little introduction. Now we're going to get into the chapter, and we'll either focus on verse 11 or 23, and we'll decide on that later on.
The great sage Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear king, in this material world there are three kinds of activities, those in the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. Because all people are influenced by the three modes of material nature, the results of their activities are also divided into three. One who acts in the mode of goodness is religious and happy. One who acts in passion achieves mixed misery and happiness. And one who acts under the influence of ignorance is always unhappy and lives like an animal. Because of the varying degrees to which the living entities are influenced by the different modes of nature, their destinations are also of different varieties."
Just as by executing various pious activities, one achieves different positions in heavenly life, by acting impiously, one achieves different position in hellish life. Those who are activated by the material mode of ignorance engage in impious activities, and according to the extent of their ignorance, they are placed in different grades of hellish life. If one acts in the mode of ignorance because of madness, his resulting misery is the least severe. One who acts impiously but knows the distinction between the pious and impious activities is placed in a hell of intermediate severity. And for one who acts impiously and ignorantly because of atheism, the resultant hellish life is the worst. Because of ignorance, every living entity has been carried by various desires into thousands of different hellish planets since time immemorial. I shall try to describe them as far as possible.
King Parikshit inquired from Shukadev Goswami, "My dear Lord, are the hellish regions outside the universe within the covering of the universe or in different places on this planet?"
The great sage Sukadev Goswami answered, "All the hellish planets are situated in the intermediate space between the three worlds and the..." What is this? Gardavaka Ocean. "They lie on the southern side of the universe beneath Bhumandala and slightly above the water of Garbhodaka, thank you, ocean, and the lower planetary systems. All the residents of Pritaloka, headed by Agnishpata, meditate in great samadhi on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always wish their families well."
The king of the Pitas is Yamaraja, the very powerful son of the sun god. He resides in Prithviloka with his personal assistants, and while abiding by the rules and regulations set down by the Supreme Lord, has his agents, the Yamadutas, bring all the sinful men to him immediately upon their death.
Some authorities say that there is a total of 21 hellish planets, and some say 28. My dear king, I shall outline all of them according to their names, forms, and symptoms. The names of different hells are as follows: Tamisha, Andhatamisha, Rava, Maha, Rarva, Kumhipaka, Kalashutra, Asipatravana, Sukha. Okay, but, oh yeah, I didn't realize how many there are. So all these planets are meant for punishing the living entities.
My dear king, a person who appropriates another's legitimate wife, children, or money is arrested at the time of death by the fierce Yamadutas, who who bind him with the rope of time and forcibly throw him into the hellish planet known as Tamsra. On this very dark planet, the sinful man is chastised by the Yamdutas, who beat and rebuke him. He is starved and he is given no water to drink. Thus the wrathful assistants of Yamraj cause him severe suffering, and sometimes he faints from their chastisement.
The destination of a person who slyly cheats another man and enjoys his wife and children is the hell known as Endatamija. There his condition is exactly like that of a tree being chopped at its roots. Even before reaching Endatamija, the sinful living being is subjected to various extreme miseries. These afflictions are so severe that he loses his intelligence and sight. It is for this reason that learned and sages call this hell Endatamija.
A person who accepts his body as his self works very hard day and night for money to maintain his own body and the bodies of his wife and children. While working to maintain himself and his family, he may commit violence against other living entities. Such a person is forced to give up his body and his family at the time of death, when he suffers the reaction for his envy of other creatures by being thrown into hell called Rarava.
In this life, an envious person commits violent acts against many living entities. Therefore, after his death, when he is taken to hell by Yamaraj, those living entities who were hurt by him appear as animals called Rurus to inflict very severe pain upon him. Learned scholars call this hell Rarava. Not generally seen in this world, the Ruru is more envious than a snake.
Punishment in the hell called Maharava is compulsory for a person who maintains his own body by hunting others. In this hell, hurting others. In this hell, Ruru animals known as Krayada torment him and eat his flesh.
For the maintenance of their bodies and the satisfaction of their tongues, cruel persons cook poor animals and birds alive. Such persons are condemned even by man-eaters. In their next lives, they are carried by the Yamadutas to the hell known as Kumbhipaka, where they are cooked in boiling oil.
The killer of a Brahmana is put into the hell known as Kala Sutra, which has a circumference of 80,000 miles and which is made entirely of copper. Heated from below by fire and from above by the scorching sun, the copper surface of this planet is extremely hot. Thus, the murderer of a Brahmana suffers from being burnt both internally and externally. Internally, he is burning with hunger and thirst, and externally he is burning from scorching heat of the sun and the fire beneath the copper surface. Therefore he sometimes lies down, sometimes sits, sometimes stands up, and sometimes runs here and there. He must suffer this way for so many thousands of years as there are hairs on the body of an animal.
If a person deviates from the path of the Vedas in the absence of an emergency, the servants of Yamraj put him into the hell called Asipatravana, where they beat him with whips. When he runs hither and thither, fleeing from the extreme pain, on all sides he runs into palm trees with leaves like sharpened swords. Thus injured all over his body and fainting at every step, he cries out, "Oh, what shall I do now? How will I be saved?" This is how one suffers who deviates from the accepted religious principles.
In his next life, a sinful king or government representative who punishes an innocent person or who inflicts corporal punishment upon a Brahmin is taken by the Yamadutas to the hell known as graduate school. I'm sorry, I just had to say. Sukaramuka, where the most powerful assistants of Yamaraj crush him exactly as one crushes sugar cane to squeeze out the juice. The sinful living entity cries very pitiably and faints, just like an innocent man undergoing punishments. This is the result of punishing a faultless person.
By the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, low-grade living beings like bugs and mosquitoes suck the blood of human beings and other animals. Such insignificant creatures are unaware that their bites are painful to the human being. However, first-class human beings, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, are developed in consciousness, and therefore they know how painful it is to be killed. A human being endowed with knowledge certainly commits sin if he kills or torments insignificant creatures who have no discrimination. The Supreme Lord punishes such a man by putting him into the hell known as Andakupa, where he is attacked by all the birds and beasts, reptiles, mosquitoes, lice, worms, flies, and any other creatures he tormented during his life. They attack him from all sides, robbing him of the pleasure of sleep. Unable to rest, he constantly wanders about in the darkness. Thus, in Andakupa, his suffering is just like that of a creature in the lower species.
A person is considered no better than a crow if, after receiving some food, he does not divide it amongst guests, old men and children, but simply eats it himself. Or if he eats it without performing the five kinds of sacrifice, after death he is put into the most abominable hell known as Krimbhojana. In that hell is a lake 11 lakh yojanas wide and filled with worms. He becomes a worm in that lake and feeds on other worms there, who also feed on him. Unless he atones from his action before his death, such a sinful man remains in the hellish lake of Krimbhojana for as many years as there are yojanas in the width of the lake.
My dear king, a person who in the absence of an emergency robs a brahmana, or indeed anyone else, of his gems and gold is put into a hell known as Sandamsha. There his skin is torn and separated by red-hot iron balls and tongs. In this way, their body is cut to pieces.
A man or woman who indulges in sexual intercourse with an unworthy member of the opposite sex is punished after death by the assistance of Ramaraj in the hell known as Taptashumi. There such men and women are beaten with whips. This man is forced to embrace a red-hot iron form of a woman, and the woman is forced to embrace a similar form of a man. Such is the punishment for illicit sex.
A person who indulges in sex indiscriminately, even with animals, is taken after death to the hell known as Vajrakantaka Salmali. In this hell, there is a silk cotton tree full of thorns as strong as thunderbolts. The agents of Yamaraja hang the sinful man on that tree and pull him down forcibly so that the thorns very severely tear his body.
A person who was born into a responsible family, such as a Kshatriya, a member of royalty or a government servant, but who neglects to execute his prescribed duties according to religious principles, and who thus becomes degraded, falls down at the time of death into the river of hell known as Vaitrani. This river, which is a moat surrounding hell, is full of ferocious aquatic animals. When a sinful man is thrown into the river Vaitrani, the aquatic animals there immediately begin to eat him. But because of his extremely sinful life, he does not leave his body. He constantly remembers his sinful activities and suffers terribly in that river, which is full of stool, urine, pus, blood, hair, nails, bones, marrow, flesh, and fat.
The shameless husbands of low-born sudra women live exactly like animals, and therefore they have no good behavior, cleanliness, or regulated life. After death, such persons are thrown into the hell called Priyoda, where they are put into an ocean filled with pus, stool, urine, mucus, saliva, and similar things. Sudras who could not improve themselves fall into that ocean and are forced to eat those disgusting things.
If in this life a man of the higher classes, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, is very fond of taking his pet dogs, mules, or asses into the forest to hunt and kill animals unnecessarily, he is placed after death into the hell known as Tanaroda. There the assistants of Yamaraj make him their targets and pierce him with arrows.
A person who in this life is proud of his eminent position and who heedlessly sacrifices animals simply for material prestige is put into the hell called Vishasana after death. Excuse me. There the assistants of Yamaraja kill him after giving him unlimited pain.
If a foolish member of the twice born classes, Brahmana, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, forces his wife to drink his semen out of a lusty desire to keep her under control, he is put after death into the hell known as Lala Baksha. There he is thrown into a flowing river of semen, which is he is forced to drink.
Yeah, there's a dark art practice in some places, including India, where the wife is forced to that position.
In this world, some persons are professional plunderers who set fire to others' houses or administer poison to them. Also, members of the royalty or government officials sometimes plunder mercantile men by forcing them to pay income tax and by other methods. After death, such demons are put into the hell known as Salamiyadana. On that planet, there are 720 dogs with teeth as strong as thunderbolts. Under the orders of the agents of Yamaraja, these dogs voraciously devour such simple people.
A person who in this life bears false witness or lies while transacting business or giving charity is severely punished after death by the agents of Yamaraj. Such a sinful man is taken to the top of a mountain 800 miles high and thrown head first into the hell known as Avichimat. This hell has no shelter and is made of strong stone resembling the waves of water. There is no water there, however, and thus it is called Avichimat, waterless. Although the sinful man is repeatedly thrown from the mountain and his body broken into tiny pieces, he still does not die, but continues to suffer chastisements.
Any Brahmin or Brahmin's wife who drinks liquor is taken by the agents of Yamaraj to the hell known as Ayapana. This hell also awaits any Kshatriya, Vaishya or person under a vow who in illusion drinks somaras. In Ayapana, the agents of Yamaraj stand on the chest and pour hot melted iron into their mouths.
A low-born and abominable person who in this life becomes falsely proud, thinking, I am great, and who thus fails to show proper respect to one more elevated than he by birth, austerity, education, behavior, caste, or spiritual order, is like a dead man even in this lifetime. And after death, he is thrown headfirst into the hell known as Charakardama. There he must suffer great tribulation at the hands of the agents of Yamaraj. There are men and women in this world who sacrifice human beings to Bhairava or Bhadrakali and then eat their victims' flesh. Those who perform such sacrifices are taken after death to the abode of Yamaraj, where their victims, having taken the forms of Rakshasas, cut them to pieces with sharpened swords. Just as in this world the man-eaters drink their victims' blood, dancing and singing in jubilation, their victims now enjoy drinking the blood of the sacrifice and celebrating in the same way.
Okay,
we'll wrap it up. In this life, some people give shelter to animals and birds that come to them for protection in the village or forest, and after making them believe they will be protected, such people pierce them with lances and threads and play with them like toys, giving them great pain. After death, such people are brought by the assistance of Yamaraj to the hell known as Shula Prota, where their bodies are pierced with sharp, needle-like lances. They suffer from hunger and thirst, and sharp-beaked birds, such as vultures and herons, come at them from all sides to tear their bodies. Tortured and suffering, they can remember the sinful activities they committed in the past. And finally, those in this life who are like envious serpents, always angry and giving pain to other living entities, fall after death into the hell known as Dandasuka. My dear king, in this hell there are serpents with 5 or 7 hoods. These serpents eat such sinful persons just as snakes eat mice. Couple more?
We'll finish this up quickly to get to the class. Now, there is a contradiction that occurred here. What are contradictions called when we study them in Shastra? Paradoxes. And I'm trying to think if you can catch the paradox that occurred here. I'll give you an example, the most common paradox, example of paradox given. A stool is dirty, cow dung is pure. That's a paradox. Because we say all stool is dirty. You know, after you pass stool, you should shower. If you step into horse, horse manure or dog droppings on the street, who doesn't feel moochy? But if you go to the most Brahminical house in India, you will take cow patties and cook with it, as I did. And I'm still alive. So that is a paradox. There is a very major paradox. Paradoxes are how we learn. You had a question? Well, we're going to get to that when we're done. But there's a huge paradox in here. Paradoxes is how we learn. It forces us to really balance competing thoughts, not be mindless robots, you might say, and forces us to come to realizations. So we have a key, heavy paradox in here. And I'm going to give you a hint, and then we're going to read the rest of the verses. But I am going to go and give you the paradoxical verse, which I have very carefully marked until my marker was pulled out. And we will go back to, here it is, marker. The king of the Pitas is Yamaraj, and it goes on. And talking about Yamaraj, after bringing them within his jurisdiction, he properly judges them according to their specific sinful activities and sends them to one of the most hellish planets, to one of the many hellish planets, for suitable punishments. So that verse, and then we're going to compare that with the other verses. And this is going to teach you something about how to deal with paradoxes and learn from it. So, a householder, 35, who receives guests or visitors with cruel glances. Oh, my God. As if to burn them to ashes, is put into the hell called Pryavartana, where he is gazed at by hard-eyed vultures, herons, crows, and similar birds, which suddenly swoop down and pluck out his eyes with great force. And he in this world, or in this life, is very proud of his wealth and thinks, I am so rich, who can equal me? His vision is twisted and he's always afraid that someone will take his wealth. Indeed, he expects even his superiors. His face and heart dry up and the thought of losing his wealth, and therefore he always looks like a wretched fiend. You know people like that. They're very wealthy and very miserable. They always get that kind of look on their face, like their face turned into a dried prune. He is not in any way able to obtain actual happiness, and he does not know what it is to be free from anxiety. Because the sinful thing he does to earn his money, augment his wealth, and protect it, he is put into the hell called Suchimukha, where the officials of Yamaraj punish him by stitching thread through his entire body like weavers manufacturing cloth. And just a few more verses. My dear King Prikshit, in the province of Yamaraj there are hundreds and thousands of hellish planets. The impious people I have mentioned, and also those I have not mentioned. So if any of you have been left out, we got a special place for you. Don't feel left out. We want you to all feel part of this. So if we missed anybody here, we got the one cover-all verse. Okay, and this is very important. And all those I have not mentioned must all enter in the various planets. Ah, we're getting into another paradox here. Same paradox is coming up again. According to the degree of their impiety. Those who are pious, however, enter other planetary systems, namely the planets of demigods. Nevertheless, both the pious and the impious are again brought to earth if the results of their pious or impious activities are exhausted. I don't have to. Okay, chapter's over. Thank you. So, with that said, are there any questions? Any questions?
I guess the question is, like, even if we are committed these sinful acts in our past life or in our past, are we still subject to go to these hellish planets?
Like Krishna says in the Gita, in this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and a little advancement path protect one to the most dangerous type of fear. So referring to that verse.
So even if, so, you know, we can go to hell, but still we'll be in Krishna consciousness. I guess is my question. Even if we do go to hell, will we still have the ability to be in devotional service?
Well, Krishna also says in the Gita, a very mysterious verse, and if we have time, I'll tell you a mystical story about this verse, but the time might not be there. But even if one commits a pichetudarchiro, even one commits the most abominable activity, if he's engaged in devotional service, he's considered saintly because he is properly situated in the aftermath, properly situated in his determination. So in these two verses, it's sort of saying, well, if you're a devotee, you kind of rise above it, but I got a problem with that. And we're going to get to that problem in a minute. So the answer to your question here seems to be yes, but there's a philosophical problem with that. And we're going to get to that. But Jita has a question. So we're going to get to that philosophical problem. And that problem is the paradox in the chapter. And of course, we only have 10 minutes, so we might not get to that, so you may never know what it is. But go on.
I was just wondering, because these are so spelled out for every possible offense you could commit.
And the last verse said even those that you didn't, that weren't spelled out, we got you covered by all sides.
So if you performed many of these things, do you have to travel from hellish planet to hellish planet? Or
that one, it could be.
Or do they just pick one for
could
you?
Could be. That part I don't know. That's a technical question beyond my ability, but I would hope so. No. Okay. Any other questions? Hey, what's the paradox? Excuse me? No. There's a lot, but what is the paradox? I'm going to read you a verse here. Let me read something and help you. This paradox is most important for understanding not this chapter, but many, many chapters. And a person in this life who is proud of his eminent position and who heedlessly sacrifices animal is put into a hell. There the assistants give him unlimited pain. So here we're saying, if you do something wrong, you go to hell and get unlimited pain. But previously, after bringing them within his jurisdiction, Yamaraj properly judges them according to their specific sinful activities. And Krishna says in the Gita, and we'll go to that verse, which is quite relevant, as all surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So in one sense, we have an absolute statement. If you do this, you go to hell. You go here. In the others, we have Yamraj's judging. We have Krishna stating, I do things fairly. So some of these verses just don't seem fair. And you can't avoid that. You read it. I mean, did any of you reading this ever feel, well, it just didn't seem fair? Who felt that way? It just didn't seem fair. Okay. And who felt they deserve more? Okay. the Bhagavatam agrees with the point of view. It's just not fair. That's the Bhagavatam's point of view. And I'll demonstrate that to you. The verses I gave here, Krishna's, as you surrender unto me, everything is not black and white. There are gradual variations. So when Bhakti Vinod Thakur came across, was commenting on this chapter, I tried to dig up those references. I'm familiar with it. Didn't have it on my bookshelf, but I did confirm the references before coming here. Bhakti Vinod Thakur actually even took this chapter as more allegorical than real. Because there is this ultimate issue of fairness. And it says here that Yamaraj is judging according to the specific crimes. So here we are using a literary technique that is often found in the Bhagavatam, found in many literatures. It's a very appropriate literary technique. The literary technique is called hyperbole. Can someone explain to me what hyperbole is? Yes. Yeah, exaggerating it. Overstating a position to make it clear. We all do this. I have told you this a million times. Don't you understand? You know, that's called hyperbole. Prabhupada was used hyperbole quite a bit in his writings, in his speech, and it's a very appropriate thing. So sometimes, in order to keep us in the middle, the extreme position must be there. And then the other thing is, for the common people, sometimes they need a little fear. Because if people, and this is Bhakti Vinod Thakur's interpretation, if people don't have some fear, then they'll just behave any way they want. When Prabhupada one time was having a 7-Up, someone gave him a 7-Up, and he looked at the ingredients, he liked it, and he said, gee, I'm having a 7-Up. Now the whole movement will drink 7-Up, but no one will get up at 2 in the morning like me. So whatever, yad yada, chati straitas, whatever the great men do, the common men follow. So sometimes, it's just like, if you see a video, at the very beginning of a rented video, it will say, FBI investigates all illegal copies and you go to jail for 10 years and, you know, a $10,000 fine or something like that. Now, if anybody has ever copied a friend's video, I never heard of anybody in the world. I mean, somebody is running a shop and making thousands of video copies, unless they live in China, which everyone does there, they're going to go to jail. It's possible they get caught. But if you copy your friend's video or something, no one goes to jail for that. But they have that warning there. It's kind of an overstatement. It cannot happen. No one will go to jail for copying their video. But the warning is there, kind of, don't do this. It's wrong. It's wrong. So the Bhagavatam is telling us, don't do these things. They are wrong. They are wrong. This is sinful. This is not good for you. It's bad for your spiritual life. Don't do this. It's wrong. It doesn't necessarily mean that somebody comes to my house and I make a face and by God, I have done that. I confess. I try not to. I try to receive any guest that comes to my house as a friend, but there's some weird people have shown up at my door. Really weird ones. So therefore, it's sort of saying in the extreme case, this could happen. It's not saying it must happen. Because it's saying in here very clear, very, very black and white. It's saying that Yamaraj says, after bringing them within his jurisdiction, he properly judges them according to their specific sinful activities. In other words, it's properly done. Very important wording. It's not that you commit one little act and Krishna said, and Bharti asked the question, well, as devotees, is there some dispensation? I say it's true for non-devotees too. I mean, for example, when I went to India, I would sometimes ride on the wrong side of the road. I didn't have a car. But I had a little putt-putt to get around. And the police would call me aside, and, you know, especially rural areas, said, you know, you're going to get yourself killed. They didn't try to extract bribes from me, as they do in India, or give me a ticket as they would in America. You know, because obviously I was a foreigner, and, you know, I didn't know the law very well. I forget. I'm used to a bad, I have another habit. And so this is like a warning, and especially to the common people, it's a little somewhat of a scare tactic that has some reality. But remember, it's very specific. Now let's get down to who we are and where we are. During the time of the Bhagavatam, Krishna came, and Krishna did a lot of killing of demons. Now, I would like to know, how many demons did Lord Chaitanya kill? Zero. So we see, as we progress through different yugas, people are judged differently. If you go to a place, if you're walking down the street in Gainesville and you spit a piece of gum on the ground, what is the penalty? I think it should be a hellish planet, in my opinion, because I might step in it, that's another matter. What's the penalty? What's the penalty in Singapore if you do that? What's that? You get whipped. You will be arrested, your shirt will be taken off, and they will take a cane and whip your back 20 times. I'm not exaggerating, that's the truth. And if you walk in Singapore, you will not find a piece of gum on the ground. So different places, different times, different circumstances, there are different standards. To people in Singapore, that standard makes sense. To people in America, it might not make sense. So what I'm trying to say is it's not one simple that if you do this, you go to hell. It depends on the time, the place, and what's the other? Circumstances. So the time right now is Kali Yuga. So Kali Yuga is a little more liberal. And the circumstances, and it depends on the nature of the crime, it depends on your total picture. So things are not so black and white. So these are some of the key points in this chapter. It's not to say that there is, on the other hand, I'm saying there's justice. So I look at someone funny. That doesn't mean, what was that? I was going to have my skin sewn, or I forgot, whatever it is. It's going to think my skin. Eyes plucked out. On the other hand, there is justice. And you have someone who is just, you know, we had Idi Amin. He was president of Uganda. Does anybody know his story? Uganda was an interesting country. It's one of the most beautiful places in all of Africa. And a lot of Indians moved there and lived there for several generations. Quite successfully. And then Idi Amin was African, Muslim man, and he took over the country, and he then threw all the Indians out in one day. So no one knew how to run the country. And then he went and plundered the country, all its wealth, and had considerable wealth. And then he would torture his enemies, and he would have his soldiers capture his enemies, cut off their ears after killing them, and then he would eat the ears for dinner. Now, eventually, he was overthrown and was given sanctuary in Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure if he's still alive, but he was living in a resort town there. So after he was overthrown, he went to Saudi Arabia and lived with his harem. He had a good-sized harem. In a resort town. It seems like that's quite unjust, doesn't it? I mean, he was eating the ears of his enemies. He tortured millions of people. Probably one of the cruelest people of the 20th century. Hitler, Idi Amin, they're in a very similar category. If anybody doubts this, just go to Wikipedia and look up Idi Amin. It will tell you the whole horrible story. There's no question of it. Now then, Idi Amin lived a good life. I think he died a few years ago, in fact, if I remember. But either way, there he was with his harem, plenty of money that he plundered the country, living by a seaside resort, protected, surrounded by soldiers. Saudi, because he was a Muslim, Saudi Arabia felt they should give him some shelter as a head of state. Somehow or other, after he dies, It's very hard for me to imagine there's not some special hellish place for him. Because otherwise, how will his subtle body be conditioned not to do that again? Ultimately, everything is for the purpose of our spiritual advancement. So to minimize and say that there is no such thing as hellish things means that there is no justice. There is no fairness. There is no Dharma. Dharma does not exist. But anybody who has seen Star Wars knows that there's such a thing as Dharma. It's just in there called the Force. So, you know, it's just most of the world believes in Dharma. It's you know, that there's a sense of justice. On the other side of that coin, and it's very important, if we think that I look at someone askance and my eyeballs get plucked out one time, that also defies all sense of justice. All sense of justice. So that means either way, it's defying the ultimate principle that there is Dharma. Now, this is the major flaw we find in Christianity nowadays. Not all Christianity, but the very fundamental Christianity will make this statement about me, you, especially you. And you're from a Buddhist family, triple you. And will make this statement, because I have not, and you have not, and you have not, accepted Christ in your heart, the penalty is what? Eternal. What does that look like? What happens there? Forever. It's like being waterboarded by Dick Cheney forever, not just 5 minutes. Forever and ever and ever. I mean, the Bush administration got so much trouble because they tortured people for 10 minutes. This is forever and no relief. And why? Because I committed a thought crime. A thought crime. I didn't even do anything sinful. My thought crime was I didn't accept some philosophical construct. And I go forever. That is weird. That defies all sense of Dharma, and that defies all sense of justice, and it allows me, as a Christian, to justify doing anything to anybody to prevent that from happening to them, and that is exactly the philosophy of the Inquisition. And that's what happened during the Inquisition. We don't have time to go into the history of that, but that has a lot to do with why we call American Indians Indians, because Columbus, during the time of the Inquisition, was looking for India, and we won't go into that whole story now, but that has a lot to do with Inquisition politics. So that's kind of what's going on in this chapter. I wanted to put it in the context of Dharma, because if we don't think of it in the context of justice, this chapter doesn't make sense. And if we do, it makes perfect sense. So, are there any questions? Yes.
So, you say this statement about hell, hells are more of like more prescriptive than descriptive?
You mean
like
they're trying to tell us how we ought to behave, and they're not. They're more allegorical. Well, there's different opinions by the sadhus on this. So, you know, it's not that there's just one opinion. And I haven't studied it in that great a scholarly detail to say. But is it prescriptive, telling us how we ought to behave as opposed to descriptive? It certainly is prescriptive. And even if it's descriptive, it's not descriptive for it's overstated. By intention. It could be, but it says twice in there that it's done according to principles of justice. So I don't think because I looked at when my obnoxious neighbor came to my door, I looked at him kind of funny. I don't think it meant my eyeballs necessarily get plucked out. Yeah, I did. No, I don't know if he knew that. I was thinking that. But yeah, well, we all do it. And in Kali Yuga, we're more or less much more subject to, we're not even guilty of our thought crimes. Here it's talking about thought crimes. But in Kali Yuga, we're only guilty of our action crimes, not our thought crimes. I mean, the horrible things we're thinking all the time, we're not even very guilty of that in Kali Yuga at all. And again, Lord Caitanya came to kill our sins, not us. So it's a different yuga.
Right. But then the possible issue could be that once we say, for example, as you said, like Bhaktivinod, once we say this is allegorical, for example, this descriptions of hellish planets, then it's okay. I don't. So how do we know the description of other planets?
Yeah. Well, let me give you an example here. Prabhupada wrote this in Hawaii. Which you ever been to Hawaii is about as close to a heavenly planet as you can get. I mean, beautiful breezes, pineapples everywhere.